That's crazy. There'd be stats about this.
Yeah.
Like, you'd have, like, I wonder what the most effective reality show is per episode, per couple, right? Like, what's the successful couples per episode of show ratio?
Yeah, you know? Like, what, who has definitively got the most successful dating show?
Yeah, by now we should know. There's like 10 seasons of all of these reality shows. We should know which one actually works.
Yeah.
Like, and then everyone should be trying to get on that one.
So with such glorious results, it's not a surprise that the Farmer Wants a Wife big dogs have come bounding over with a bunch of lads who are ready to lasso in some lovin'.
No, don't you dare bound over.
They're bounding over.
The farmer wants a big dog bounding over.
Taking to Facebook and Instagram, Farmer Wants a Wife revealed its 2026 lineup, featuring six great hunks of spunk who are looking for a wife.
Oh, man, wives aren't looking for hunks of spunk. They're looking for just human men, usually. Sometimes other things, but a farmer, you know, not just a bunch of semen.
And a hunk of it.
A hunk of semen.
Just a real hunk of it, you know, solidified almost.
Oh, spunk. Oh, spunk. God damn.
It has to be so thick.
It's gelatinous.
Yeah, you know, it's like, it's, you know, Pokemon if you've monk. Ever tried to, like, squeeze, like, cold pawpaw ointment out of a bottle, it's got that consistency. Anyway, tired of the apps and looking for true love? The post began. Apply now for your chance at countryside romance with one of our farmers. Yeah, here's some of the, here are our farmers. So we have Farmer Jared.
Jared.
He's a 41-year-old almond farmer from Taylorville in South Australia. Then we've got Farmer Dylan, a 24-year-old sheep farmer from Cherry Gardens, South Australia. Farmer Alex, a 20-year-old beef and mushroom farmer from Kinkin in like Queensland.
Beef title.
And mushroom. Beef and mushroom.
Yeah, man, you get the cows in through the poops and out of the poop grows the fungus.
God.
Oh, no.
Make a whole stew with that farm.
For incredibly morbid reasons, many folks have pointed out that they've got the perfect person for Farmer Alex, with a comment being like, beef and mushroom farmer, I've got the perfect woman for him, but she won't be able to come to the farm for 20 to life.
Erin Patterson is not the first murderer I've met, but she's certainly the most odd.
I mean, you know, people are entitled to the sexual proclivities, you know. I mean, let there be a thousand blossoms bloom, but I ain't spending any time on it.
Hi, Kieran.
Hi, Ani.
Hi, Casey.
Hi, Ani.
Hi, Casey.
Hi, Kieran.
That's the fastest we've done that. Hi, everybody else. Thank you for joining us, everybody at home. Welcome back to Shouldn't Have Come, the 100% grass-fed Australian podcast.
Wow.
Yo.
I'm Yanni, your host for the evening, and with me I've got some friends and we're going to go on a journey, but first, some housekeeping. We have had some work schedule changes, so after this week, new episodes will be dropping on Thursdays. I hope that's not too extreme for anybody.
Whoa!
The other change is we will be, I hope, uploading the slideshow that I talk about during the episode, or Kieran talks about during the episode, as the video for the YouTube version. The episodes are still going to be made primarily like for audio, designed for audio, so you're not going to be missing things if you're not at the slideshow, but if you want to put it on in the background while you're, you know, doing the Wordle or whatever you do.
You know, the kids, if you're doing the Wordle.
Yeah, or if you want to, you know, if we make fun of someone's face and you want to see what they look like, or if we got a map or something. Yeah, it'd be nice to have there. That's perhaps a slightly more extreme change.
Whoa.
On the topic of extreme, today we are going to be doing something a little bit extreme. We are going to be looking at Australia's most extreme...
Drum roll, please.
Geographic locations. It was geographic locations if you didn't catch it.
Whoa, that's pretty hardcore. My socks have been knocked clean the fuck off.
And you've only just put on new socks.
I just put on new socks.
Yeah, strongos and dropkicks. We are going to be talking about the parts of Australia that are furthest north, south, east, and west.
Holy shit.
Which, if life was simple, wouldn't be that hard. If Australia was just the name for the big landmass, we wouldn't really have that much of an episode. For what it's worth, you know, let's talk about the extremities of the Australian mainland. Most everybody knows about Byron Bay, which is all the way to the east out in the New South Wales bulge. Most people have heard of Cape York, which is at the tip of Queensland's pointy bit. The southernmost point is at Wilson's Promontory in Victoria, which faces Tasmania. And the westernmost point is Steep Point in WA, named that because it's at the top of a cliff.
That makes sense.
But this map of Australia, the one you have in your head, is nowhere near complete. And not just because I haven't mentioned anything about Tasmania, because we're not going to talk about Tasmania, like, at all this episode.
Damn.
Australia is a latent sea empire based around a few sizable coastal metropoles surrounding an inhospitable desert. Man, that was a hard sentence.
You were really, really going for it, though, as well.
It was a hard sentence to say.
It sounded good.
So Tasmania, she's not with us.
Yeah, like, I don't care.
You know, look, here's the thing about Tasmania. You can forget about her sometimes, you know?
You can't sit with us.
You can't sit with us. I mean, they're not going to listen to this anyway because all of their phones are made of wood or whatever, so it's not like...
wood doesn't carry a...
Yeah, it doesn't carry a signal like that.
Shit. All those rare endangered hardwood trees are cutting down.
Exactly.
You can't sit with us!
And the fish. The fish, you see. We need to get Jackie Lambie on the pod.
Oh, I wish.
Jackie.
Absolutely not.
Like, I think Jackie Lambie is my true dream guest.
Damn.
I have the most questions for her.
That's interesting.
I also want to hear her talk about nothing. Just the way she talks about something. I just want you to give her a random topic and just see where she goes with it. Because I think she'll like have some kind of heartfelt thing she can grab onto.
Yeah, I'll talk to Jackie Lambie about Green Day. And she'll be like, oh, you know, the thing about Green Day is that if you go into their deep cuts on 1039 Smoothed Out Slappy Hours or whatever, the first album's called.
God damn.
She's like, the fifth song on it actually spoke to me when my son was on heroin or whatever.
It saved my life.
It saved my life. No, as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted.
Again.
Australia is a latent sea empire based around a few sizable coastal metropoles surrounding an inhospitable desert. And so the real map is the one that shows Australia's exclusive economic zones. And here is that.
Oh. Oh, okay. This is broader. This is, wow, we're including islands and I suppose also our section of Antarctica?
Yeah, we'll get there.
Okay.
So, everyone at home, I need you to imagine Australia in your head. And we'll be using the terms left and west interchangeably this episode, as well as east and right. We're talking about maps.
Fine,
you know,
by me.
Left and right, you know, it's all good. But so if you go out to the west or the left, you have to go out about like the height of Western Australia away from Australia before you get to the Cocos Keeling Islands, which is all the way out in the Indian Ocean. South of Australia is Macquarie Island, which is like Queensland away from Tasmania. In the New Zealand direction, you know? There's also Heard Island all the way out in the southwest or bottom left of the map. I'd say like a full Australia's length away from Australia, probably.
Yeah.
And to the east, to the right, you have Lord Howe Island, which is like a Tasmania away from Australia. And then Norfolk Island, which is like a Victoria away from that.
Yes.
Does that sound like a pretty good description of this map?
Yeah, that sounds very accurate.
Hell yeah. So the exclusive economic zone of a country is a fancy-sounding way of saying usable land and sea.
Mm.
The American Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration describes it as the area in which a nation has jurisdiction over both living and non-living resources.
Right.
I just
That's
like,
an interesting thing to say.
I guess it's correct. It's also just like living and non-living resources is a cursed phrase.
Yeah.
I don't like the sound of it. But basically, yeah. Obviously, Australia can do whatever it wants inside, like on Australia. Hence all the new mines they keep opening.
Yeah.
But it'd be illegal for an Australian company to open up all the way out in the middle of the ocean unless there's some claimed territory around there. Mm. So the zone stretches out about 230 miles from any land that Australia controls.
Okay.
So if you have a little island in the middle of the ocean, that's a circle roughly the size of Victoria that Australia can, you know, do whatever it wants with. Australia has the third largest exclusive economic zone in the world.
What?
Yeah. Not even including the Antarctic... territories.
Holy shit, who's beating us?
I feel like I should know this. I think it's the United States and Canada.
Well, that would make
sense. Or something, or United States and Russia or something like that. Or, yeah, I think it's one of those two. I forgot to actually check that, which is very funny. But yeah, I think the United States because of like the Alaskan territories and all of their island territories.
Yeah.
Guam, Puerto Rico, shit like that.
Yeah, Hawaii and all of the surrounding islands. There's a lot of islands around there.
That makes a lot of sense. Damn, that's crazy.
Yeah, so we're going to go in a little geographical jaunt around the parts of the country that we try to keep quiet. Because it kind of looks bad, you know?
Mm.
And we're going to start in the direction that I didn't mention. The north. If you keep going upwards from Cape York, you get to the Torres Strait, a group of islands that stretch out to Papua New Guinea. From the big map, you can't really see where the border between Australia and Papua New Guinea is. So we're going to start by zooming in and having a proper look.
Ooh.
So, Kieran, what do we have here?
Well, the first thing I noticed is there's an island called Coconut One.
Oh, those aren't ones. That's I for island.
Oh, yes. Okay, cool. I was like, damn, where's Coconut 2 at? When are they dropping Coconut 2?
I want to look at a good pair of coconuts right now.
Exactly. Okay, so we've got the top of Queensland. We've got Cape York there. We've got a special quarantine zone for the Thursday Island group. Then it seems like we have a series of islands. What, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 in the Torres Strait protected zone. And then if we move upwards, there's like, what, there's a line here, which is the fisheries jurisdiction line, which, is that Australia's fisheries jurisdiction line?
Yeah, so that line...
So that goes all the way to Papua New Guinea's coast?
Yeah, Australia's...
What the fuck?
Yeah, so, and I'll explain for the listener. The borders between Australia and Papua New Guinea pretty much go all the way up to Papua New Guinea, encompassing all of the islands between Australia and Papua New Guinea, which is the Torres Strait. These borders, as well as the Torres Strait Protected Zone, were established by the Torres Strait Treaty of 1978. This was established by Australia and Papua New Guinea from the actual act as good neighbors and in a spirit of cooperation, friendship, and goodwill.
That seems suspicious to say, given like what our territory goes all the way up. That would be like if like New Zealand was like, yeah, we get all of the fishing up until like, yeah, like Byron.
Yeah.
Like when you get to the Bay of Byron Bay, that's when it's Australia.
That's when
waters.
It's Australia. It's a little bit like that.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So the line that you mentioned, the fisheries jurisdiction line, Australia has the exclusive rights to any fish south of this line, and Papua New Guinea has the exclusive rights to the north of it. The line, as you'll notice, snakes between Boigu Island and Papua New Guinea. Boigu Island, which is to the south of the line, is an Australian territory, and Papua New Guinea is obviously a different country.
But they look like you could see one from the other.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. You can. What we're saying for the listener is that Australia has and exerts territorial control of every island to the Papua New Guinea coast, which is known as the Torres Strait. Of note, before we dive into it, the island, you can see on the map, Kieran, but the island of Dauan in the Torres Strait, Dauan, is actually the northernmost mountain peak of the Great Dividing Range.
Whoa.
So before
for realies?
Yeah, so before sea levels rose, Dauan, which is like, what, maybe 20 kilometers from Papua New Guinea, that was like the mountain peak of the, you know, northernmost Great Dividing Range mountain.
Holy shit.
Which starts in Australia.
That's crazy.
Obviously now it's just an island. So, let's get to the fuckery. Casey, zoom and enhance.
All right, what is this? The northernmost point of the Commonwealth.
So, what we've just got on the slides is a little map zooming all the way in to the border between Australia and Papua New Guinea.
Oh, no.
So Moimi Island is a tiny island off the coast of Boigu Island. It's, like, minuscule. It's a couple hundred meters across.
Hmm.
And on Google, it's labeled as the northernmost point of the Commonwealth of Australia.
Damn.
And it is roughly 4 kilometers away from Kasa Island, which is part of Papua New Guinea, since the 1978 treaty. Previously to this, Papua New Guinea was like an Australian colony till like the 70s. So
yeah.
There was that. But there is 4 kilometers of water between Moimi Island and Kasa Island, and the line snakes between that.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, it means that Australia has this complete maritime choke point to its northern border.
Yeah.
So, you know, Boigu Islanders, like elders of Boigu Island, are actually taking the Australian government to court in a class action lawsuit because Boigu Island, as well as much of the Torres Strait, is sinking under the rising sea levels.
Yeah.
And they're saying you need to either stop emitting these greenhouse gases or deal with the problem some way or another. But the little note we had on that map on Moimi Island that says that it's the northernmost point of Australian territory, that's not actually true. The actual northernmost point is Bramble Cay.
Oh.
So even though it's north of the fisheries jurisdiction line, it's an Australian territory. And there's no people on it. It's the actual northernmost point of Australia. It's really in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
It's...
What the fuck?
Like
it's less close to Papua New Guinea than, like, the other islands we just spoke about. So
yeah.
There's that, I guess. But it's also very much still there.
It's further away from Australia than the other ones. And yes, the furthest north one. And Bramble Cay is known in the local Meriam Mir language as Mizub Kor. It is a seasonally populated place. People come to hunt and tend to the island some of the year from Irub Island, which is kind of close.
Okay.
Well, it's seasonally populated by humans. There is also the Bramble K. melomis, an endemic rodent species on the island.
Oh, no. He's great. Yeah. I like his little ears.
Yeah.
Big old eyes.
Very cute animal, right?
I love him.
Well, there were melomis.
No! Oh, so you cruel. Fuck. You fuck. You fuck. Yikes. Where are they now? In my heart only?
Yeah, well, after a few levels of the increased storms and sea level rise and climate chaos, they went extinct in 2021.
No!
They are known as the first mammal to go extinct due entirely to anthropogenic climate change.
I'm gonna put my fist through a wall. What do you mean?
Yeah.
But I love him. But Daddy, I love him.
I know. It's a little bit heartbreaking. When I said we're going to have fun, I really should have said we're going to have feels.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's Bramble K. That was the Bramble K. melomis. Talking about climate change, on Saibai Island, they're dealing with the effects of overfishing. Saibai, like Boigu, is an Australian territory that's basically attached to Papua New Guinea. From the ABC on our next slide for Kieran to read out.
From the foreshore of Queensland's Saibai Island, you can see another country. It's one of the few places in Australia where that's possible. And where is Saibai up at the...
From the foreshore of Queensland, they say. Look at where, like, the Australian mainland stops.
Fuck, that's so goofy.
There's a
what
full, like, 200 kilometres
about?
Away. It's about 5 kilometres from Papua New Guinea. But it's like from the coast of Queensland, you can see Papua New Guinea.
It's like, yeah, because that should be Papua New Guinea's island. Because it's right fucking there.
Yeah.
And we're all the way over here.
Or its own thing. We're not going to go into it too much. There have been, like, different independence movements in different areas here. We're not going to go into it too much in this context.
That's goofy to call that part of Queensland. That's fucking silly.
Isn't it just? So, Saibai Island is apparently seeing an increase of illegal fishermen from Papua New Guinea, which is how it's described.
Well, yeah, because it's right there.
Yeah. Apparently, they're being pushed further and further out from the Papuan coast to find enough fish to make all these big orders. There's a type of fish that's quite popular in parts of Asia that are becoming more wealthy, and so there's this huge export market that's growing, and so the type of fish, which, listen, on the website, it said they were called Jewfish, spelt exactly like Jewish people fish.
That is a type of fish, but I feel like it has other names.
I just don't want to... Anyway, but yeah, so they're being pushed further and further out from the coast, and if they go, like, 2 kilometers from the coast, they're in fucking Australia again.
Jesus.
And the Torres Strait Protected Zone, which encompasses the Torres Strait Islands except for Thursday Island, allows for visa-free travel between the islands for certain activity, which does include traditional fishing. It's allowed for traditional activities, but not for all activities. Right. So if you're in the Torres Strait and you're going from one island to another island for a funeral, visa, no travel permits, no nothing like that. Even if you're going across the Australia-Papua New Guinea border. Yeah. You have a special visa for that area only. However, you're not allowed to do that for, like, commercial activities. But there are traditional activities that are fishing.
Mm.
They're considered to be part of, like, traditional ways
culture,
of life,
yeah.
Right? And in that gray zone, you have... It gets a little blurry when it comes up against the hard edge of profit.
Well, yeah.
It's like... Listen, we need... This is a traditional 3,000-seat barge or whatever.
Jesus. Yeah, very traditional.
Very traditional. On the topic of fishing, there was some classic China-style warmongering about another one of these islands, Daru Island, which was being developed by a Hong Kong... Well, was proposed to be developed by a Hong Kong-based company back in 2020. In the ABC article, it's described as on our doorstep and near the Australia border. The next slide that I have is a good map showing where Daru Island is in relation to Papua New Guinea, from an article about the potential impacts on Australian fishing and security.
Like, so we're getting two images here. We've got one, which is the proximity of Daru Island to Papua New Guinea, and then zoomed out to show that to its proximity to Australia, which is just like, again, it's... Closer, Daru, it looks like, is closer to Papua New Guinea than Tasmania is to mainland Australia.
Oh, no, by
magnitudes,
100
right?
times. Yeah.
You could swim that. Like, that's probably like 4K, right?
It's like 4 or 5 kilometers. You can walk across. You can't walk across. Across, rather, is what I meant.
That's fucked. And then, like, what? Oh, that's a threat to us.
Yeah, so...
That's fucked.
The threat itself, as you can see from the image, it is very much Papua New Guinea, and it's not going ahead. And for the record, it does seem like it was like one of many proposals by this company. Like, yeah, we could do this. We could turn this into a fishing thing. Mm. But like at the time, the Australian defense chief was like, you know what? I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to develop the island so they can do fishing. Well, they're going to do commercial fishing. You know what you can, you know what you can do with an island that can take a commercial fishing boat? You can take a military, you can take a naval boat as well.
Oh,
you know, they're
God,
they're going to build a pier.
Up.
They're going to have the Chinese Navy's going to come in through Papua New Guinea.
You're going to be right here.
Yeah. So you're going to continue to hear a lot in the news about China's supposed influence in Papua New Guinea. A lot of that does come down to building stuff, medication, some military things, and, you know, kind of a relationship that makes sense given the countries.
Yeah. And also that's kind of the trade-off you have, like, because Australia does much the same thing.
Yes.
In the same way that it's like, oh, yeah, we'll give you some aid and some infrastructure. We're going to put a cheeky base here.
Yes.
But, you know, but that's just the trade-off for aid and infrastructure. And also, you're going to owe us a lot of money for it.
Yes. And that's one of the things that, like, China's, like forgiven Papuan debt. Like, they kind of just, whenever asked, will forgive the debts that countries have to them. They don't restructure them like the IMF tends to do when you're getting, like, loans from Western countries,
yeah,
even from like Australia,
yeah, which like makes total sense and makes sense that like if I was in one of these island nations and my options were between Australia, who's going to like absolutely charge me money, put a military base here, yeah, I'll get some stuff like infrastructure, some aid, but also Australia does not have a good opinion of these countries. And also, like, just doesn't hold up their end of the bargain when it comes to being, like, I guess a very paternalistic kind of influence.
Yeah.
Like, in the way that climate change has made impacts to people living there, where I think Tuvalu comes to mind.
We recently accepted a bunch of climate refugees from Tuvalu.
It's going to continue because the island is fucking sinking.
Yeah.
And I knew an academic who was an ambassador to Tuvalu and... You know, this was years and years ago, and he was like, oh, yeah, we're fucked. Like, they're fucked. The people there are fucked. Like,
more than a third of the population of Tuvalu have applied for an Australian visa.
The encroachment of the ocean onto the island is, like, quite literally unstoppable. He was like, I don't know what we do from this point, but the government needs to, like, start taking in refugees because...
Yeah, and that's what's happening now.
That's it. Yeah, they're saying that this is going to be an island-wide evacuation.
That was a conversation you would have had, like, 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, the entire...
The writing's been, you know, on the wall.
The entire South Pacific, not the entire South Pacific, a lot of the islands in the South Pacific, those people are going to have to go somewhere.
Yeah.
A lot of them are going to come to Australia.
Yeah.
And the really racist Australian population base will have fun with that.
Yeah, that's going to go really well. So, yeah, I get why if China is like, hey, we're a newer world power, like, I guess... Not really, but hey, we're coming into this region.
The oldest world power.
We're a little bit more. Yeah, they are actually. They're like, hey, we're fresh on the scene for y'all, making deals and such. Yeah, here's a deal. We can forgive that debt, and it's like, oh, well, hell yeah, hell yeah. This might just be a better deal. And economically, as you've said, if there's also a lot of like trade between Papua New Guinea
there's trade. And like I'm, you know, I hear a lot of people, and I think. The deals made by Chinese state-owned companies are way better than the equivalent ones from Western companies. I'm sure you're also going to see, like, big capitalist exploitation. Like,
for sure.
You see some fuck shit from, like, some of the mines in Africa and stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, on mass, it's like, well, we'll build the thing and we won't, like, bankrupt you for it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, don't worry about it. Australia fans, I know you're worried about China's growing influence.
No, I am.
But we have a bang-up plan to reassert our influence in the South Pacific.
Bang it up for me.
Kieran, could you just read out the top news story on this next slide? Don't worry about the other two, just the top news story on this next slide.
Okay. Australia seals PNG rugby deal to counter Chinese influence. Shut up!
Yeah,
that's right.
No, it's fine.
We're going to get the boys to play rugby because sport's really the most important thing in the world.
Sport's the only important. But no, it's important.
Off.
That's our cultural soft power. We've got the Papua New Guinea rugby team.
It's almost every political or like land-based podcast, rugby or a rugby player is in every single one of them.
Sick
They're
of it.
Always
Sick
there.
Of it.
There's always...
Sick of hearing about these fast and burly men.
We like sports and we don't care who knows.
Especially Brick. I miss Brick.
Brick.
Brick was so good. The brick with eyes.
Yeah, the brick with eyes.
Fuck.
Yeah. Don't read the other two news headlines. When I said that, it was part of a joke where
China,
it was like,
Papua New Guinea pledge to enhance bilateral practical cooperation, and PNG's 2024 trade with China exceeded 17.8 billion K, which is what, like, US. Let's go. US, $4.39 billion.
I guess K is probably whatever the Papuan currency is.
Yeah.
I thought they used the dollar.
Today's generation uses the Papua New Guinea kina in daily transactions.
But yeah, so That's
it's like China's doing like actual big boy politics and actual big boy trade and is like, hey, let's make a deal. You're an adult, I'm an adult, let's make a deal. And Australia's just like, you want to be on the footy team, lad? Come on, buddy, you can kick the ball around. Yeah, and we won't even call you a slur to your face.
Call them the Papua New Guinea gooners.
Oh, my God.
The Guinea gooners. The Guinea gooners.
Fuck.
So that was going to be the end of this section, right? Like, this was the punchline, right? Because I think we've touched on everything, and we've gone long enough, and we have to travel east. But then I clicked on the article about Chinese and Papua New Guinean bilateral relations, and I got really confused, right? So you were about to see a picture of the Papua New Guinean foreign minister and the Chinese foreign minister.
Okay. What?
Karen, what would you say is going on here? Are you confused like me?
Yeah, this is I'll say it, a really well-manicured Chinese man. He's got great hair. You know, great fit. I like this guy. And, like, the doughiest Australian motherfucker I've ever seen in my life. Receding hair, ass motherfucker. Like, he's got a, like, he's not just got a dump truck. He's got a dump fleet. Like,
he's got a Clive body.
He's got a Clive. Like, for a moment, I was like, it's not Clive, is it? It's not Clive.
Oh, my God, if it was. You ever seen a fat boy
in a big body? I hadn't actually paid attention to
Justin Kachenko?
Yeah, Justin Kachenko, yeah. Why is Papua New Guinea's foreign minister a white guy named Justin Kachenko?
Yeah, why the fuck is that?
Why is Papua New Guinea's foreign minister an Australian born in Melbourne to Ukrainian immigrants who moved to Papua New Guinea in his 20s, won the British Empire Medal as a 25-year-old for his services to gardening, and became a multimillionaire with a huge property portfolio in Australia?
Sorry, gardening?
What?
Gardening. He's like a horticulture expert. He was like the head of gardens in Papua New Guinea.
The head of gardens is a...
At like 27 or something. I think he had a more official title, but he was like the head curator of gardens or whatever.
Is there a medal?
The British Empire medal. Yeah, he got the British Empire medal for gardening or something. For like his services to gardening, right? At like 25 or something.
Can I get a medal for gardening?
Well, I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Are you in Papua New Guinea and now about... Oh my God. So stupid.
He was in trouble for a while. His daughter got him in trouble.
What'd she do?
So again, Papua New Guinea. A lot of poor people in Papua New Guinea.
Oh, what'd she do?
So Justin is going to King Charles's coronation as Papua New Guinea's representative.
Of course he fucking is.
Because of course Justin Kachenko is going. Again, a Ukrainian guy from Melbourne. An Australian guy who's a Ukrainian from Melbourne. And he's taken his daughter, which he's already not allowed to do, right?
Fucking hell.
Because it's on the public dime.
Yeah.
And Savannah Kachenko is eating in the Singapore Airlines first class lounge and like taking pictures of it. And then doing a bunch of TikToks about buying like luxury bags in Changi Airport and stuff on her way to the UK. Which, yeah, like I said, already she's not allowed to be there on this first class trip to go meet the queen or whatever.
She's not going to meet the queen, is she?
Right, the king. She'll meet Camilla.
I think she's queen consort.
She's queen.
She actually just dug up the queen's body.
She's like, she's oh my God,
she's
crazy.
She's riding Lizzie's face.
Yeah, as she should.
Riding her bony nose.
Damn.
And the hashtag she uses on the TikTok video is Aussies in London. And it is on the Papua New Guinean official dime that she is traveling. Because she's Australian, to be fair.
Yeah.
She's Australian.
Yeah.
His whole family is Australian. This is an Australian guy.
Why the fuck is he in a governmental position there?
I don't know. When asked about this controversy, he said the Papuans critical of this were primitive animals and useless people with nothing better to do.
I'm going to kill him. Like, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to shove him into a blender.
We're talking about Chinese foreign influence, and this dude is their foreign minister?
He's just like, oh yeah, these fucking dirty browns. I don't give a fuck.
What
They're animals.
Fuck?
And it's like, what the fuck?
Anyway, so that's now going to be the end of this story, because I just, this is the guy I've been like, I've been waiting to tell you about this guy.
I hate him so much. I hate him so much. I want to rip him in half. Like, I want to grab his cheeks and rip him in half. Like,
he's so infuriating. And he doesn't seem particularly popular, but...
Well, look at him.
For some reason, he's crucial in Papuan politics for some reason or another. Like, he seems to exert a great deal of influence because he, like, retired after that incident with his daughter. And he's back now.
What the fuck?
He retired for, like, 6 months.
Well, yeah, because he's probably done some shady fucking shit. And now he can do whatever he fucking wants.
Yeah. So anyway,
Hey, Justin, you're a dog.
That's Justin Kachenko. But let's leave the Torres Strait and start our clockwise jaunt around the country. A 23 or so hour series of flights later, we will find ourselves landing on Norfolk Island.
Norfolk Island.
Do you know anything about Norfolk Island?
Nothing. Well, maybe.
What do you think you know about it?
I don't know. Is that the island with all the white people?
You mean England.
I do.
No, yeah, Norfolk Island is one of the islands with all the white people, but I think it's not the one that you're thinking of.
No, probably not.
But that one will come up as well.
Oh, good.
You know Norfolk Island? Other than when I told you about it 2 days ago.
I mean, I'm not American, but I plead the fifth.
Okay, cool. In Australia, the Fifth Amendment gave Indigenous people the right to vote.
I will plead that every day.
Hell yeah. Here's some interesting things about Norfolk Island, right? Kingston, the capital, is actually the second oldest white people settlement in Australia.
Damn.
Wait, that doesn't make sense because it's in the middle of the fucking ocean?
Yeah.
Don't worry, whatever. There's about 2,000 people who live on the island, and the older ones speak a Creole that's called Norfolk. Karen, I was hoping to get you to read some Norfolk for us.
Okay. Okay, well, this just says Norfolk.
yes, that is, the language is spelled N-O-R-F-U-K. It's Norfolk.
Yeah.
And nah, here's some
nah fucking way.
Nah, fuck. Here's some sample text in Norfolk for you to read.
Okay. Should I be okay? I'm gonna do it. Norfolk is a Creole language spoken in Norfolk Island, and as descended from Tipitcairn language and to settlers from Pitcairn Island. It's a mix of Old English and Tahitian language with English making more influence. With English making more influence. Sorry, that's just Dutch.
How do they spell language?
Yeah, language. Now that one's a tricky one. So that is spelled, and say it with me, everybody. L-A-E-N-G-H-W-I-J. Island is spelt kind of like A-I-L-E-N.
It looks like alien.
You know, it looks a little whole like Eileen.
Press it, you'll get the translation, but I think Kieran got it all.
Norfolk is a Creole language spoken in Norfolk Island and is descended from the Pitcairnese language of the settlers of Pitcairn Island. It's a mix of Old English and Tahitian languages, with English making more influence.
So there's like a Norfolk Wikipedia that has like a few articles
on it. That's iconic!
And there's a huge argument about, like, whether it's going to, like, remain or not. Because, like, none of these articles were written by anyone in Norfolk Island.
I love looking into Wikipedias like that, where it's just like, hey, yeah, this one article has been translated into, like, every language possible.
Every language.
This is not relevant to the podcast. Who was it that we looked up? There was, like, a YouTube video, and it was like, hey, this one guy's stuff has been translated into every single...
Corbin Blue.
It was Corbin Blue!
Yeah, Corbin Blue's Wikipedia page is, like, really translated.
Yeah.
Corbin Blue from High School Musical.
The actor.
For some reason, his Wikipedia page has been translated into every language.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Also, there's that kid who was, like, he was, like, making, like, Scots Wikipedia, but it was all just, like... kind of racistly written English in a Scottish accent. Yeah. And like he had like hundreds of thousands of articles or whatever, and then they were iconic. Like, wait, this isn't Scots, this is just like racist English.
You can't stop me.
So I found this cool report about the history of Norfolk Island. Here's some of the surviving descriptions of life on this idyllic, you know, subtropical paradise in the 1800s for you to read, Karen.
Okay. The title is The Terrors of Norfolk Island. All right.
A machine for extinguishing hope, and a place of perverted values where evil was reckoned to be good and where the unbelievable became the norm. A miasma of sin, where horror and vice beyond sane imaginings grew like poisonous fungus on a dung heap. A place of brutal extremes that made degradation and despair the dominant characteristic of convict life, and where death itself was to many a welcome visitor. A place of hard and incorrigible old lags, some of whom were criminal lunatics, others half-crazed, warped and perverted in mind and body, or mere brutes of low mentality, or rotten with every vice produced by the degraded instincts of the worst types of subhuman beings.
That was an incredible reading.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
I also like almost closed my eyes and imagined like a 1940s like black and white horror film. Or, yeah, like the ones that were like just when they started doing audio.
Yep.
I'll put some like filters on it and stuff. Hell, make it sound kind of old.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So Norfolk Island has this pretty bad reputation of where the British Empire send the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst, if I'm getting the chain right.
Okay.
So the worst go to Australia, right? Yep. And then the worst of them go to Brisbane, and the worst of them go to somewhere terrible like Logan, and then the worst of them go to Norfolk Island.
Damn.
Yes.
Now, if you know anything about the British Empire, they had a very loose definition of what was considered worst or even crime.
Yeah.
Because the real goal was to establish settlements with as many working-age men in as many places as possible to allow Australia to embiggen and start producing.
Yeah.
Even the idea that Norfolk Island was for people convicted of multiple crimes isn't true. The Cool Report I mentioned did a study of 6,458 convicts on Norfolk Island, which was 3 years of arrival, I think, and they found this breakdown. So there were 2,590 men who were sent from New South Wales, so double convicted, 1,703 men who were sent directly to Norfolk from England, 1,270 who came from Tasmania, 730 who came from England as part of this like prisoner rehabilitation experiment led by a guy named Alexander McConaughey.
Oh my god, of the Alexander McConaughey Centre in Canberra?
Yeah.
Bruh.
Yeah. And 165 freeborn or native Australian men.
Damn.
So, regardless of where they all came from, you'd think that all 6,500 of those people must have, like, killed, maimed, and raped entire villages, but that's not true either. So, the report I've been mentioning by Tim Kauser at King's College London has this breakdown of all the offences that sent people to Norfolk Island. Now, before we look at this, I want us to remember a couple of things.
Okay.
One, you can't trust a cop now, let alone a British cop in 1825.
God, no.
So who knows what actually happened? And two, it looks a lot like the youth crime breakdown from a few weeks ago.
Oh, fuck.
Here is the crimes for Norfolk Island.
All right, what have we got? Nature of offence.
What's the top one, Kieran? And then I'll talk a little.
The top one appears to be, oh, of course, offences against property, non-violent.
Yeah, so out of all of the most...
64%?
64% of the prisoners were for non-violent property offences. We're talking about things like burglary, pickpocketing, stock theft or whatever. There is a guy who was sent to Norfolk Island for the theft of a single duck.
Wow. Holy shit.
You'll also see right there at the top, as in not most, but highest up on the list, the top thing there.
Acquitted in court but sent anyway?
Yes. So, it's only a couple of dudes, and one of them was sent over because he had, like, gang connections. They're like, we can't let him loose, because, you know. And the other one, his name is Giuseppe La Barbica, or Barbica, or whatever, right? And he stabs a guy named Stephen Steventon.
What?
To death.
He deserved it.
Well, that's the thing, right? At Morden Bay.
It's like, hey, what's your name? Stephen Steventon. He's like, nah.
Apparently, everyone else in the prison was like, nah, Giuseppe didn't do it. Because I guess everyone wanted Steven dead.
Everybody hated this fucking guy, so they're like, none of us saw who did it.
Because of his stupid fucking
name.
Why
is Giuseppe covered in blood? And they're like, he had a nosebleed. Leave him alone.
So it's entirely possible that he didn't do it, obviously. Like, we are relying on the word of cops. But that is what is being brought out, that he stabbed a guy to death in, like, the Moreton Bay penal settlement.
Yeah. And then the community was like, meh.
It's fine.
I
but it was like,
better dead.
But they were basically like, yeah, we think he'll be acquitted in court, but we're going to send him anyway.
Fuck.
So underneath that, the next crime that got someone sent over is...
communicating with editor of Hobart Guardian? What?
Yeah, it's a crazy crime which amounts to the silencing of internal dissent. So, reading between the lines, a big chunk of the crimes on the list are people who are, you know, unhappy with the indignities and cruelty of their lot in life in Australia. A lot of people are sent here for, like, absconding and bushranging.
Mm.
a lot of those offences are all like offences against the system,
yeah,
which you see at the bottom. And at one point, the lieutenant governor, it's the 1800s still, so it's, you know, not a parliamentarian.
Mm.
He still has the exclusive right to send people to Norfolk whenever he decides, which, you know, we love to hear. So a fun one, which we're talking about, this newspaper guy, is William Cook. And at first I was like, oh my God, like a Cook convict, but seems to be unrelated to the Cooks we know about.
Nice, okay.
But it's a dude who was communicating with the editor of the Hobart Guardian, which was an Irish sympathizing newspaper.
Mm.
So that's the thing. They're still dealing with, you know, Ireland stuff.
Yeah, they're like, don't you dare talk to the fucking Irish.
Exactly, because this is,
well, still, I imagine, because a lot of the guys also sent out there were also Irish.
Exactly. And so they're like, we can't let them like get together. This will come into when we talk about Ned Kelly finally, because something I've read is that, you know, he viewed himself as much as an Irish person as anything else. Possessing firearms in general apparently is like a synonym for just like bushranging, which is just like leaving the hell society that they're trying to make you build. Down at the very bottom of the list, you see a couple that are kind of funny.
Unnatural offences?
Karen, what do you think that is?
An unnatural offence?
Come on. Oh,
like pig fucking?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, bestiality.
All right, nice.
So here's what the report says. Karen, this is for you to read out.
Oh, no.
Could I also just ask one thing?
Oh, yes, before we talk about the pig fucking.
There's one that says medical treatment. Did somebody go for receiving or performing medical treatment?
We'll cover it. But yes, there is one person, actually, I should have mentioned it earlier. There is someone who, receiving medical treatment, was sent to Norfolk Island.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, I'll explain. But on the unnatural offences.
Yeehaw, onto the pig fucking.
Most unnatural offences were men convicted of bestiality, and a couple of men swore that the animal they were caught with was female, as though it was a mitigating factor. Mate, I'm not fucking a bull. It's a cow, okay? She's a woman.
Yeah. There's also a guy who said he absolutely didn't fuck the cow that he's being convicted of, but he is going to plead guilty because he hates living in England.
He's like, this is a free trip out of this hellhole. I didn't fuck the cow, but put me away for cow fucking.
Yeah, so I think he fucked the cow and is trying to have it both ways.
I mean, he should have been fucking a bull then.
Yes, all right, so not many non-white people end up on Norfolk Island. There's only 8 indigenous people there, including a 65-year-old who was convicted of sheep stealing in proceedings described at the time as farcical because he absolutely didn't speak a word of English.
Damn. Right? So they just grabbed this dude and was like, you're a fucking thief. And he's like, what?
Well, he's not. Yeah, yeah, pretty much. He's just like,
hello?
I can't imagine what he thought.
he was like wearing a sheepskin. He's like
I don't hello? It's hi. Like,
there was a sheep. You guys brought these sheep here.
It's like, yeah, that...
What are these? Like, I mean, I guess also it's like, I mean, this is a few years in, like, many years into the occupation, but I don't think about how like sheep would have been just like, what are these?
It's like, hey, what the fuck is this?
Why is this thing so...
What is this hairy bitch that you brought here?
Yeah, why is there hair everywhere except its head?
Yeah.
And why are there so many of them now?
Confused. Don't like the way it has like no toes.
Why haven't they got no toes, man?
Dislike that.
I think that's roughly the story for a few of the indigenous people on the island.
Mm.
There's also 2 Muslims there who are, you know, probably like they're both roughly slaves, right? One of them is Mirah Sheikh, who's originally from Mauritius, which is British Mauritius at this time, and he's the one who needs medical treatment. He's like a slave, right? So his master or whatever took him to Hobart, and he's really sick and dying in Hobart.
Mm.
And they're like, oh, maybe we should send them somewhere a bit nicer, like where he's from. Well, we can't send him back to Mauritius. We'll just send him to the prison island.
What the fuck?
Norfolk Island. And it seems not to work. And
yeah, here's shit.
Well, here's the kicker. Here's the kicker for me, at least. Guess where the other Muslim on the island was born?
Australia.
No.
Is it also Mauritius?
No. It's Calcutta.
What?
The city my family's from. We're fucking everywhere, I swear to God.
Holy shit.
This is deeply scribbly history, but it does seem like Bukash, who was a cook slash servant by trade, was born in fucking Calcutta, which is, you know, modern day Kolkata. To be fair, it was still Calcutta and it was still the capital of the British Raj at this point. So it makes sense there's a guy from there, but it also was just unnerving for me to be like, there's a motherfucker from, like,
there's like a fucking Bengali
guy here. Yeah, of course there is. So all these motherfuckers out in the island in the middle of nowhere. Some of them stay for months, some for a few years, and eventually you have a bunch of rebellions, none of which work. There are six rebellions between 1826 and 1846. In those six rebellions, the convicts managed to kill 12 soldiers. 56 of the convicts were hanged or otherwise died in the attempts, and the one time they left the island, they drowned at sea. But can you blame them? I mean, they tried their best under difficult circumstances.
Yeah, and also, a quick question, I'm sure you'll probably mention this anyway. Were there any women on the island?
Like a few, but they
were... Is it like officers' wives and shit?
Yeah, pretty much. I think there were a couple of female prisoners, but it was, I think, almost entirely men. And there
I was
going to
say, like, you have like a dude soup out there, you know?
Well, that I think a lot of early Australia was that. They didn't, like, they wanted the men to just be working and workers, right, and not have... wives and kids to look after.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so almost everyone on the island was men. Many of these men knew that they were just waiting around to die, and there wasn't going to be a family or in a future for them. The Australian reported about one of the hangings in 1842 that feels reflective of the mental state of impassioned, hopeless rebellion.
We heard several of those employed about the jail remark that they had never witnessed men come to the scaffold so firm, yet in so resigned and devotional a state of mind. Damn.
But, yeah, like, they were just like, oh, I guess this is what we have to do. We've got to try to get off this thing. It's not going to work. Oh, it didn't work. I'm glad I tried.
They're like, you know what? This is a guaranteed way out.
Yeah.
Everything else was a gamble. This one, I know this one works.
This one works. So after a while, it became obvious that Tasmania would be a way easier island to keep the convicts that you want to put away on.
Well, yeah, because also it's closer.
Yeah. Again, rather than this speck of land a couple of weeks' boat away from the mainland. So in 1865, the last convicts left Norfolk Island, and the British had stopped sending people down there, you know, down to Australia by that point anyway, so there's less of a need for it. So where did the 2,000 people that lived there come from? Well, in 1856, the people of the Pitcairn Islands, another British territory, were outgrowing their tiny little speck of land in the middle of nowhere.
Damn, what the fuck? It's like halfway between... It's closer to South America than it is to Australia.
It is roughly halfway between... New Zealand and South America.
What the fuck?
The Pitcairn Islands are in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah, holy shit.
And the people who are living there, like, the land isn't enough for them. There's too many people. It was kind of...
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it was always where else do they go?
Like, well, yeah, it was always kind of written as, like, they're outgrowing. And it's like, well, I don't know, there's too many of them. So the British are like, well, we have this recently abandoned island with a bunch of buildings on it between where you guys are and where we are. So we can just drop you off there. Would you like that? And they did, right? So they move in. They move into the old buildings.
Yeah.
And it's good for them, right? Because eventually, Pitcairn Island and its remaining descendants are going to be known as the island from which one-third of the island's male population, including the mayor, was accused and convicted of sexual abuse of minors.
That sounds about right. And Pitcairn Island was absolutely the island I was thinking about when we spoke about...
Yes. So there were, like, a few families... And I think the line that stuck in my head was like, I mean, everyone knows the age of consent here is 12. Until like recent, like in the last 20, 30 years, I think. And yeah, it was a few families that were, I think they were the descendants of, there was a ship that mutinied, the Bounty, and they ended up crashing on Pitcairn Island. And at some point, I think they had Tahitian women with them. And so the children are all like the children of these white, like British soldiers and Tahitian women. And some of them stayed on the island. And I think it's the like descendants of the original
Bounty
are the ones who mainly stayed. And I think one of those descendants is the mayor who was convicted of all the pedophilia.
Yeah.
Yeah, a third of the male population, which was like, I don't know, like 17 people or something.
And also in saying that that's like just like convicted.
Yeah, they had to, I think they had to turn one of the old schools into the prison because they sent people from, because I think, so it was a British court, but New Zealand ran it. Because again,
somewhere
that's very, like, I know Pitcairn is far from New Zealand and South America, but it's very far from the United Kingdom.
Yeah, by magnitudes, yeah.
Yeah, so, but they're like mixed. It's one of Australia's only mixed race populations. So for a while, Norfolk Island is legally part of Tasmania, and then it becomes part of New South Wales, and then it becomes part of Australia when Federation happens. It's then an airbase in World War II, but in 1979, we get to the limited self-government period. This is the only time that there's been, like, a semi-autonomous Australian territory. Under this, they seem to have a kind of quasi-communist society. Mm. If you look at the, like, actual amount of money going around, it looks like everyone's poor, but everyone is kind of looked after, although people do tend to, you know, work a lot to make it happen. There's not many people there, and so the limited food and such is kind of shared on this informal basis. For the record, something like $60 million in royalties is generated each year by international fishing within the island's exclusive economic zones, which all goes to Australia, but whatever.
Holy shit.
So, in 2015, Australia kind of makes them have a local council and start to pay tax and become part of Australia again, which the locals seem unhappy with. It's not that complicated a story. The people want to be left alone, but they also are an aging population that require more medical services in the way that Australia administers itself. So they're also losing tourists because of their GST and fuel levy, and Fiji's just a lot cheaper and Bali's a lot cheaper. But Norfolk Island now votes in the electorate of Bean, Australian Capital Territory.
Holy shit, they vote in Bean?
They vote in Bean, all 300, all, I think there's only a few hundred eligible voters or whatever.
Fuck off.
Jesus Christ.
So because it's like a federal territory, it's administered through Bean. So in 2019, the island did a survey of 457 residents, out of about 2,000 in total. They found that about a third of people preferred free association with New Zealand, which is, free association is you are independent to an extent, but there's a specific country that you have a lot of lax rules with in terms of trade and travel and stuff like that.
Cool. So, like, in the way that Australia has with New Zealand?
A bit more. But in a very close relationship that's not independence, but not, like, a colonial relationship.
Okay.
So about 37% preferred that with New Zealand, and then 35% preferred that with Australia. And then 25% preferred independence, and then only 3% preferred, like, full integration with Australia.
Okay.
Becoming a part of Australia, which is what's happened.
Six guys.
Nine people, I think.
Damn.
But, you know, the survey was done by, like, the mayor of the island, so he might have also been selecting people specifically as well.
Yeah.
Like, he seems like a slimy guy. But it's certainly more consultation than they seem to have got from the federal government, who are open about the challenge of helping people understand a system where they've never engaged with bureaucracy before. Why are you making them?
Yeah, like, honestly, like, just do what we do with Sentinel Island. Sentinel Island.
Leave them
just
alone.
Like, just fucking leave them out there. You know, you can fly a copter over every so often.
They're all naked with spears.
And it's just shit, they're alive. It's fine. They're fine. Just leave them, you know.
If you remember the time in the 1980s when the French did a state terrorism on a Greenpeace boat flagged in New Zealand, do you all remember this?
Not at all.
Oh.
Their methods were the methods of the French combat diving school, and their weapons were limpet mines.
The blasts ripped a hole through the Rainbow Warrior's engine room.
Right, there was a Greenpeace boat flagged in New Zealand that was on the way to protest French nuclear tests in Mururoa, which is kind of close to the Pitcairn Islands. You'll notice nowhere near France.
Yeah.
Middle of the Pacific Ocean. One guy was killed and they bombed a boat.
How long France. Ago was this?
Oh, the 80s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, France did state terrorism on New Zealand in the 80s.
Jesus Christ.
So the French agents who did it, they sped away in a fancy yacht, and they landed on Norfolk Island to lay low for a while. And the Norfolk Islanders are like, who the fuck are these guys? This is way too nice equipment. And these guys are all, like, French, and, like, they're too, like, properly dressed to be the kind of tourists we get.
Yeah.
So the Norfolk Police Force, which seems to have been a 3-person volunteer force.
God bless. Of course it is.
Gets a call from Australia being like, you have to follow these French fuckers around. We think they bombed a boat and killed a man.
Oh my God. Can you imagine?
And so it's like, in no circumstances are they allowed to leave the island, especially by plane.
Yeah.
The Australian police is like, I think Bob Hawke calls them. It's just like, we think they've, like, killed a Kiwi.
And so, what the guys on the island are like, well, fuck, man, what are we supposed to do?
So they're doing their best, right? They're like, we're going to send some cops from New Zealand that are like proper cops. But until then, don't let them leave. So they're just like following them around being like, hey, welcome to Norfolk Island. You guys want anything?
You
want to
come see this room? Yeah, yeah, no, go in further. go further in the room. No, there's something really good at the back. Just keep going in. They've all the way in.
Put a little A4 sheet of paper that says prison on top of the sign that previously said like post office.
You know, library.
So the Norfolk Islands Customs Administrator thinks that Australia was pressured by France to let them go because, like, they were given a day once the New Zealand cops arrived to make the case. Again, for, like, murder and terrorism.
Yeah, what the fuck?
They were given one day and it was like, all right, fine, let them go.
That's fucked.
In the 1980s, those guys never saw justice.
Fuck off.
Let's leave the Norfolk alone for now. I don't know if we'll ever be back, but Norfolk is one of those places that you'll see reactivated if some kind of armed conflict in the Pacific breaks out. So
it's
keep an eye on it.
All about armed conflict in the Pacific.
One day. Hopefully not. So anyway, let's hop on an Antarctic barge or whatever and go to the southernmost Australian territory. The famous spot where all the penguins gather, Macquarie Island.
Yay. Aw, that's a nice strip of land, actually. That's quite cute looking.
Yeah.
It's like, looks like, you know, like the crust of my pizzas.
That's a good way of putting it. It looks like a pizza crust. I was thinking for a long time, like, what is it that Macquarie Island looks like? I kind of came up with, like, matchstick, but it's more of a pizza crust.
It's more of a pizza crust.
It's very much vertical. Before we actually get to Macquarie Island, let's take a moment to sail a little bit further south, about 34 kilometers to be exact. The southernmost point on the globe that's, like, Australian, as it were, is the Bishop and Clerke Islets, and they are so small that there is no way to show them on a map that gives you any idea of its location. They're like 250 meters across, mostly rock, albatross land there sometimes. Here's some albatross hanging out. What would you say that picture is?
Fuckload of albatross.
Yeah.
For starters.
A lot of albatross that hang out there.
Yeah, this is just big ass sea rock.
It's just a rock.
Yeah.
Covered in bird shit.
Yeah. I couldn't find any publicly accessible maps of the Bishop and Clerke Islets. Like, they do exist, but you have to buy them. I don't know which one's Bishop and which one's Clerke.
It doesn't matter, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's just big fucking rocks out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, but anyway, let's talk about Macquarie Island. The first thing I asked when I saw it, and the first thing you said is like, hey, why is it shaped like that?
Yeah.
It's about 35 kilometers, like, tall and about 5 kilometers wide. It kind of looks like, you know, a matchstick or, as Kieran said, like a pizza crust. Just floating around in the middle of the ocean, mostly north-south oriented. And it's because it's actually the tip of a mountain range, most of which is undersea.
Oh.
Similar geological processes are happening at Macquarie Island that produce New Zealand. You have two continental plates or whatever grinding against each other, sort of squeezing a mountain out of the ocean floor.
Mm.
Macquarie Island, thus, is really the tallest point in the Macquarie Ridge, and the Bishop and Clerke Islets are two of the similarly sized peaks.
Huh.
If you draw a straight line out from New Zealand's South Island, you'll kind of hit Macquarie Island, and if you keep following it, you'll find another couple of random rocks jutting out of the ocean. That's basically the border between the Pacific Plate and the Australian Plate, which both slam into the Antarctic Plate after a few hundred kilometers south of Macquarie Island, which creates a triple junction. This image from Macquarie University talks about the Macquarie Triple Junction and gives us an image of Macquarie Island.
Damn, okay, so we have, what, the Australian Plate? On the left, we've got the Pacific Plate on the right, and then the Antarctic Plate at the bottom. What do we have here? So
you have these three plates that are, like, jamming into each other at the bottom, and Macquarie Island's north of that. But we're not actually really going to talk about seismography. Just know that if you draw a straight line out from New Zealand, you kind of get to Macquarie Island, and it's because it's on the same continental plate.
Yeah.
But here's something. The university, Macquarie University, talking about the Macquarie Triple Fault, south of Macquarie Island, they're all named after Lachlan fucking Macquarie. And the university has nothing to do with the island.
Right.
The mass murdering slave owner who is thought of as the architect of the nation is one of the most named for people in the whole of Australia. He made Australia's first toll road, helped make Australia's first bank, and was criticized back in London for letting convicts go without a criminal record once they served their time, which did allow for Australia to put the sheen of a nation state on top of its people storage.
Damn.
I got derailed from the island and wanted to see how many places are named after him, and here's what Wikipedia has for me. There's Macquarie Island, Lake Macquarie, the Macquarie River, the Macquarie Marshes, Mount Macquarie, the Lachlan River, Port Macquarie, the Macquarie Pass, and the Macquarie Riverlet. Those are all the geographic formations named after him. There's also two streets, a lighthouse, a fort, and a suburb in Sydney, a pier, hotel, and an electorate in New South Wales, two more streets, another pier, and another river in Tasmania.
Is there not also a suburb in Canberra?
So those are all the things named after him during his life.
Oh, God. Damn it.
A great many of which were named by or suggested by one Lachlan Macquarie.
Macquarie's a pretty good name.
After his life, you also have two more suburbs in Sydney, the suburb Macquarie in Canberra and its main street, Lachlan Street, and then Macquarie Hospital, University, Investment Bank, Grammar School and Correctional Centre.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Not content with all this memorialising and idolatry of himself, his wife, Elizabeth Macquarie, also has a bunch of things named after her.
Of course.
And all of her names and biographical details. There's Elizabeth and Campbell Streets, so that's her maiden name, in Hobart. Elizabeth Street in Sydney, Elizabeth Bay in Sydney, Mrs. Macquarie's Point, Road, Chair and Culvert around Sydney, the fucking city of Campbelltown, and then also Appin and Airds in New South Wales, which are the names of the places in Scotland that she's from.
What the fuck?
I thought the Macquaries between them might have more places in Australia named after them than Queen Victoria, but she seems to have about 40 while they've got 33.
And, oh, wow.
And she does have all of Queensland and all of Victoria.
Yeah, damn. Like, I guess on the scale of things, yeah, Vicky wins.
Yeah. Anyway, Macquarie Island never... I can't even say that anymore. Macquarie Island.
Macquarie.
Never became much of a settlement. When the first white folk got there, they say they found the wreck of a boat. One of the first white folk is like, this looks like a French boat. And the other one's like, this looks like an ancient Polynesian boat. And the boat's gone now, so who knows. But someone probably got there before, wrecked there, didn't leave any trace of a lasting civilization. But not even the let's send them out to Norfolk Island guys could stomach putting convicts on Macquarie Island. One early captain describes it this way.
The most wretched place of involuntary and slavish exilium that could possibly be conceived. Nothing could warrant any civilized creature living on such a spot.
So the big thing about land is if you can't put people on it and it's just sitting there, then it was a waste of all those good man hours getting your asses there. However, also sitting there were enormous numbers of seals, which were good for all manner of commercial commodity. First, they almost wiped out the fur seals for their skin to keep people warm on Macquarie Island or whatever. Once they'd killed about 120,000 of them, they turned to the elephant seals for their blubber, which had become a more profitable commodity in the 1820s. Once they'd reduced that population by about three quarters, they were looking around for what to exploit next. Over in Norway, huge developments in blubber and fat extraction had led to the development of a steam pressure digester. It's a steam pressure digester.
That's a great metal band name.
Bug.
The development of a steam pressure digester, which is an old-timey pressure cooker. And this led to a bright spark named Joseph Hatch to open up a new business. From the New Zealand newspaper, The Press.
When the elephant seals left the island in November, he turned his attention to first king, then royal penguins, clubbing 2,000 in a day and packing them into his digesters before firing them up with good Ohio coal and boiling the penguins for 12 hours until all the oil floated to the top. The remains were spilled out onto the beach to be washed away in the tide and feed the numerous orca.
What the fuck?
Yeah, so...
this bitch just boiling penguins?
The big thing about this technology was that, oh, previously getting the blubber from penguins wasn't worth it because you have to cut the penguins open and they're so small, the amount of blubber you get isn't good enough.
Now we can just throw them in a vat and just fucking boil them.
Yeah. There was a big controversy because someone reported that he was like clubbing them into the thing.
No! He's just like playing golf with the guy.
Yeah, and the guy's like, you know, the penguins like are landing in the thing still awake or whatever sometimes.
Oh my God!
And that's why when you hit a hole in like golf and like you don't have a penguin, right? You have an albatross.
You have an albatross.
Yeah.
A penguin's actually, if you kill a bird in the process of winning the golf game.
Yeah.
2,000 in a day.
Just, there's one. There's another. Eventually, however, reality set in. I mean, for one thing, everyone seems to have hated this guy.
Well, yeah, because he's a fucking psychopath. He's killing 2,000 birds in a day and boiling them, sometimes still alive, and then spilling their fucking leftover husks of bodies, probably, like, mutilated beyond belief, probably like a slurry of chum into the water to feed the orca.
Yeah,
Because you know what he's going to do next? Going to fucking hunt the orca.
Wait, no, he's got such a good business doing penguin oil.
Well, he's already fucking killed all the seals.
You go to the store and there's penguin oil on the shelf. It's like, is this like baby oil or like peanut oil?
Yeah, like, hey, quick question. Which one of these is
this
it?
Four penguins or five penguins? But penguin oil, it turns out not to be like that profitable a commodity.
Yeah,
over time.
Bro.
Technology changes and... Also, people are horrified.
Yeah, for good fucking reason.
Like, there's some people who support him. But, yeah, there's... What this leads to, this is part of what leads to some arguments between New Zealand and Tasmania about who owns Macquarie Island. This is the settlers fighting for pieces of the pie, so I don't care about that shit.
Yeah.
Eventually, Macquarie Island becomes an ecological reserve, which means we're going to start the second wave of Macquarie Island killings.
No, why?
So when the people came over in the first place, including that guy, right?
Killed all the seals.
What did I say
and
his
the
name was Joseph?
Shit. Yeah, Joseph Hatch.
Joseph Hatch, right? So they bring rats and mice. They come on the boat, right? So there's a bunch of rats and mice on the island. So obviously they bring cats to eat the rats and the mice, right, off the island. And then
I don't know why she swallowed the fly.
Well, then. Imagine if that lady, while she's doing all those things, like, unrelatedly, was like, you know what, I'm hungry, let's get some rabbits and birds that we can hunt. We'll breed them for food. So they eat a bunch of the vegetation and they kill off two of the native bird species.
Fuck me!
It's estimated that the cats are killing about 60,000 birds a year. So over the 15 years from 1985 to 2000, 2,500 cats were killed to save the birds.
Of course they were.
This largely seems to have been a shooty-shooty pow-pow operation. This, however, also saved the rats and the rabbits.
Of course it did.
Which keep eating the really thin grass layer, which means the island's falling apart. It leads to the amazing ABC headline, Rabbits Blamed for Penguin Deaths in Landslide.
Yes! Rabbit and penguin war by association.
In a landslide, like it was a really bad defeat in a sporting game.
So bad that the just island dissolves.
The island's just, because like there's not much vegetation that holds it together.
It does look like a strip of land. It almost looks like somebody man-made like an airstrip and then it deserted it.
It looks fake.
Yeah.
It looks so fake. Oh, Kieran's going through it.
There's so much animal death in this.
We're mostly done.
I'm just going through it. Not only because of the animal death, which is obviously horrendous, mostly just the absolute audacity of humanity, once again strikes me. And I'm like, damn, just the absolute choices. How? There's no way to even think of what question I want to ask, which is, how do you even get to the point of being like, okay, we're going to save the birds? But to do that, we also have to get rid of the rats, so we'll bring in cats to kill the rats. Okay, all right, that's a dumb idea, but I get it. Like, okay, you need to introduce a predator to do the thing or whatever. That's poorly thought out, but well-intentioned. And then just like, hey, you know, while we're putting cats here anyway, let's also put in some rabbits and some other birds, ones we are allowed to kill. And it's like...
That's the worst thing.
Wait,
it's like,
what are you talking about? You're clearly, putting them there to kill them?
Yeah, they clearly understand the idea of trying to keep balance. And then they're just like, but let's just throw it
off.
Fuck
it anyway.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, it's like, oh, this won't change anything. Are you dead stupid?
Like, how do you half know what's going on? How do you only half
like
know?
That, oh my God. Well, we have to be able to hunt.
Yeah. It's also really, really weird that this is also in the same story as the bestiality stuff. So, like, somebody fucks a cow and gets sent away for their life.
Yeah.
This guy kills thousands upon thousands of animals. And it's just like, he's gross, but we're not going to do anything.
He's an entrepreneur.
Makes a bit of money. Yeah.
Well, I mean, hey, yes, he clubbed them into the big vat and boiled them alive. But he didn't fuck them first. If he'd fucked them first, well, make sure that that's a girl penguin. And B, probably couldn't get as much money because...
Better be an empress penguin.
Better be an emperor.
Yeah,
better be a king
penguin.
That's a king. Oh, my God.
In 2007, the Australian and Tasmanian governments funded a full-scale pest eradication of Macquarie Island, about $25 million. So first they did mass baiting, and they were like, some of the birds will die, but not, you know, it'll mostly not get him, but it mostly got him. So they stopped doing the mass baiting.
What?
So then they released a disease that makes rabbits hemorrhage.
Oh, the rabbit hemorrhagic virus, which they keep trying to release into Australia. And then, funny how this works, because rabbits breed so frequently, their breeding cycles are so extreme. Turns out, when some of them turn out that they're immune, those ones will just breed. And then they're all immune to the virus.
So they had to bring in some more shooty-shooty, and then they brought dogs, trained by Australia's most famous dog guy, Steve Austin. Like Stone Cold Steve Austin, the wrestler. For some reason, Australia's most famous dog trainer is named Steve Austin.
Stone Cold Steve Austin!
He does a lot of ecological stuff. He trains dogs to hunt, like, past animals. As of 2024, the island's ecosystem is closer to what it was before all this shit happened than it's ever been. Because the rabbits are gone, and the cats are gone. A couple of the birds are gone. However, they weren't coming back anyway. And the original birds are coming back. So, you know, things are going well. That's Macquarie Island, the southernmost Australian territory, kind of, whatever.
A true and emblematic story of Australia and our response to ecological issues.
Well, you know, it's the largest ever pest eradication program.
Yeah. Mainly because I don't think they gave a fuck about collateral.
Yeah. I mean, they made it happen in the end, you know. Now, like, I don't know, it's weird. It does seem like things are okay there now. They're like, yeah, everything's kind of growing back. All the animals are coming back. Things are good. Hell yeah. We finally did it. We fixed one place.
Fuck me.
We fixed Macquarie Island. Now we just need to do that for all of Australia.
Fuck off.
Anyway, we're going to go further south for a little bit, past a bunch of fake islands that were sighted by British captains in the 1800s and put on maps despite not existing.
Love that.
Yeah, known as Phantom Islands, the most notable seem to be the Emerald Islands, the Nimrod Islands, Doherty Island, the Royal Company's Islands, and the Terra Nova Islands, which remained on maps the longest. It took until 1989 until a German team actually tried to land there and found no island.
Fucking nut. What? 89?
Yeah. 89. The rest were, I think, 1930s. By the 1930s, it was like, this island's clearly not here. But I think that one was just in a really inhospitable place and quite small. And it was just also not a real thing. They think it was probably just an iceberg.
And this dumb motherfucker.
Yeah.
I don't think you should be allowed to be like, I found land, unless you're standing on the land.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing that kind of comes up later. Mm. Anyway. So finally, we do get to the big ice flow that the Earth precariously balances on. I mean, you know, that's why it spins, because the bottom of the Earth is so icy and slippery.
God damn it.
Welcome to the Australian Antarctic Territories.
Well,
you better bundle up, because we're headed to Antarctica.
The Australian Antarctic Territory is about 40% of Antarctica.
I was going to say, the section highlighted on the image is fucking huge.
Yeah. It's the largest claim by any country on the big guy.
Yeah.
Kieran and Casey can see a map, but imagine if Antarctica is a kind of misshapen pizza, the biggest three of eight slices is Australia's.
Fucking nuts.
Except for a teeny little gap.
Yeah, whose gap is that?
Why, that's Adélie Land, French Antarctica.
Oui, oui.
Of course it is.
It's the fucking French.
You know.
I swear to God.
How the French are there.
There's a Bengali guy, there's the French.
First
who
they
next?
Tried to kill Greenpeace, and now this.
Yeah, actually, yeah, the French have not gone all well during
Why
this
the fuck
episode.
Are you all involved?
Yeah,
fuck
I swear
off.
To God, like, France is not... like
Hon baguette, bitch.
France famously has little islands all over the world, but they also claim this part of Antarctica.
Of course.
I hate these fucking baguette heads. But anyway... the battle for Antarctica is really about finding a way to the middle from something you can call a port and shit like that. It's yeah. mostly very stupid. There's also like a burnt down French research station on the coast, which has already contributed to a bunch of pollution in Antarctica.
Of course it has.
But the rest of that area, that big 40%, you know, about a third of the pizza chunk is Australia's. For what it's worth, I thought we'd go through really briefly who all the Antarctic territorial claims are actually made by.
Yeah. Okay, so what do we got here?
So most of it is Norway and Australia.
Yeah.
Besides literally the part with the least land, which goes to New Zealand.
Yeah, holy shit, it does too. Oh no.
You'll notice the
part
that's
I was
going
to say,
mostly...
it looks like they've got a good chunk, and then you see the actual land, and it's like nothing.
But they do have the closest area to the centre, it seems. If that was the goal, to get like a port closest to the centre.
Yeah, New Zealand can get closest to the center, to the South
Quickest,
Pole.
I suppose.
So that's true. But I think also getting to... because basically there's a big divot in Antarctica, and New Zealand has it, for those that are listening at home.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Then there's some overlap between Argentinian, Chilean, and United Kingdom claims, which is weird because Argentina and Chile are very close to Antarctica and the United Kingdom is on the opposite side of the world. This is because of the Falkland Islands.
Oh, of course it is.
And because there are two sets of Antarctic treaties. The white people countries, the United Kingdom, Norway, France, Australia, and New Zealand, all agree with each other's claims, but no one else recognizes them. The reason this isn't a controversy is because it's not that important to claim Antarctica yet. There's some research stations there and stuff.
I was going to say, it's because, like, resources really haven't been found there yet. It is very much like a research area.
But it is estimated to have the third biggest oil reserves in the world after Venezuela and Saudi Arabia.
Well, that's not good, is it?
So, who knows what's going to happen in a warming world? But, yeah, that's all, like, that's all I kind of want to talk about this far south is a bit of a keeping in mind. Australia hasn't really been exploiting its Antarctic economic zones. I think that's still considered illegal.
Mm.
But as the world changes, who knows?
Yeah.
Oh, right. One of the Australian stations is called Casey.
Yeah.
Aww. Very nice.
Red capital letters.
It's short, like, yay, Casey.
Short for Casey Station. But yeah, so I suppose...
Casey Station, that's a beautiful name.
Yeah, this is my little daughter.
You know, I'm Casey. It's short for Casey Station.
It's a hyphenated name.
This is PlayStation, a new sister, Casey Station.
Casey oh my
Station.
God. Very fun. We should go to Casey Station. But yeah, by...
Choo-choo. Yeah.
By how the map works, the southernmost Australian territory, I suppose, is somewhere near the South Pole. But only if you ask one of five countries, one of them being Australia. Let's head away from the South Pole and go about one-third of the way to Madagascar, where we find two big mountainous bits of ice in the middle of the ocean. Welcome to the Heard and McDonald Islands.
Damn, okay.
Nobody lives there, and since sealing was banned, there's not much economic activity there. They did a lot of sealing there as well.
Of course they did.
But we kind of already know that story.
Yep.
It supports a small fishing industry, which brings in about $100 million per year. Small fishing industry.
Very small, you know.
The scale of what constitutes an economy is staggering. Anyway, so the McDonald Islands are much smaller and they're further to the west slash left.
Hmm.
There's a very, very tiny rock slightly to the north of McDonald Island, which is called Meyer Rock.
Yeah.
And it is the westernmost point of Australian territory.
Hmm.
In fact, the Heard and McDonald Islands are some of the most remote islands in the world. They're really closer to Antarctica than anything else. And if you look at the world from the bottom, you can really see how they're in the fucking ocean.
Bruh. Bruh. Wait, is that... I just realized it was titled Earth Butt. sorry, excuse me. Is that, like, one of those areas where it's, like, flights going over there, it's, like, the worst possible spot, obviously, to have, like, a medical incident or to have a plane issue because it's like, oh, you're actually, like, so far away from anything, you're fucked.
Yeah, the point of inaccessibility, I think, is what it's known as. One of the points of inaccessibilities is near, like, furthest away from any landmass where you could be helped is near the Heard and McDonald Islands.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also to be freezing temperatures down there.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It's like an Arctic or
like
Antarctic.
This is fucked.
Exactly. So the little speck of land that you can see from space... if you look in the direction of the Heard Islands, is actually the Kerguelen Islands.
Oh.
And the Heard and McDonald Islands are much smaller parts of the same underwater mountain.
Okay. Different peaks or whatever.
Yeah, the Kerguelen Islands are also known as, like, the Desolation Islands.
Oh, fuck.
Damn.
Sounds promising.
They are a French territory.
Of course they are.
The irony of Heard Islands is you'll never be heard from again.
You will never be heard from again. However, the isolation of the Heard and McDonald Islands means that they produce two things which are the same thing that make them important from extreme Australian perspectives. One of them is the most extreme of all geological feature. Both Heard and McDonald Islands are centered around active volcanoes, which don't exist anywhere on the actual Australian continent.
Mm.
They regularly erupt these days. Heard Islands kind of always erupted, and McDonald Island had been dormant until 1992, but since then it's been going every few years.
Mm.
The other extreme thing Heard Island has is Big Ben. Big Ben is a mastiff, which is basically like a big mountain with a bunch of, like, mountaintops.
I was about to be like, they've got a big dog on the island.
I love that it's like, we have these active volcanoes, nobody goes out there. Also, there's this dog.
We have this
also,
volcano
big
dog.
Also, Big Ben, the coolest dog in the world.
No, Big Ben is the name of the whole island. I mean, basically, Heard Island is entirely this mountain, right? And much of these mountains are volcanic, and one of these mountains is Mawson Peak, which peaks out at 2,745 meters tall, which makes it Australia's tallest mountain.
Of course it is. Oh my god.
Yes. Mount Kosciuszko is about 2,228 meters tall, so Mawson Peak actually clears it by about 500 meters.
Jesus Christ.
I've heard people say that in the context of the Seven Summits, Mount Kosciuszko is essentially a hill.
Yeah, that tracks.
And I think that, yeah, I think the fact that our tallest island... Well, there's three mountains in the Antarctic Territory that are taller than Big Ben on Heard Island as well. But again, not everyone agrees about the Antarctic Territories.
Oh my fucking god.
For the record, as far as I could tell, like, the 100 tallest mountains are all in the kind of Himalayas region. The tallest mountain not in the Himalayas is Mount Aconcagua or Aconcagua in South America. But yeah, like, most of the tallest mountains, like, I don't think any Australian mountains in the top 10,000.
God fucking no.
Yeah.
It's, oh my god.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm getting a little chilly, aren't you? Brr.
Oh no.
How about we go someplace a little bit nicer? How about an island paradise? We have to, I assume, spend months at sea going from the oceanic point of inaccessibilities to find ourselves at the Cocos Keeling Islands.
We welcome everyone that come to visit Cocos Islands.
All right, here we are.
So they're... On all maps, you'll see it like Cocos brackets Keeling Islands, right? Mm. Keeling was just the old name of it because that's a British dude who sailed past it. Again, yeah. I don't think he actually landed there.
Classic.
But they're known as the Cocos. They're a territory I first learned about a few years ago, but we'll talk about it again here. Mm. The Cocos Islands are a tiny archipelago that's just like out there. They're way closer to like any other country than, you know, the Heard and McDonald Islands or whatever, but they're still pretty much out there. Mm. And the story of how they came to be is just as out there, and we'll get to that in a second. For the listener, the Cocos Islands are in the giant expanse of ocean to the left of Australia on maps. It's like half of Australia is away from Australia. It's closer to Sumatra and Indonesia, for what it's worth. So we don't, unlike most of the time, have any evidence of a pre-existing human population on the islands, which is always nice. Mm. They're actually such a charming little shape.
Wow, what the fuck? Why is it shaped like that? Looks like when I put a mug in a sink that isn't all the way full, and so the rim of the mug is sticking out, but everything else has water.
Mm.
Oh, it does kind of look like that. It's basically two like coral atolls that have curved around each other, and they're named for the coconuts on the island.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's why they're the Cocos Islands. And yeah, they're very pretty looking from above, and they're kind of cool shape. Like if you imagine, it's basically just like a broken ring.
Yeah.
Of a few islands that kind of like get close to each other, but yeah, they are, you know, although it's not one of the geographical extremities, it's not the northern or westernmost point. It is the part of Australia closest to England.
That's kind of really funny.
So that's how I put it in here.
Hell yes.
There's two islands that people live on the Cocos. West Island, the big one on the left of the image, and Home Island, which is mainly the city of Bantam on the top right of the image.
Okay.
West Island is where, like, Australians live, like the white folk. Mm. And Home Island is where about 500 Cocos Malays live, the descendants of slaves brought over by John Clooney's Ross to harvest coconuts.
Of course.
That's why they're known as the Cocos Islands. Although they're now known as Cocos Malays, the ethnic group, they're from all over Indonesia, Timor, New Guinea, and as far as South Africa and Mozambique.
Damn.
Their culture has a kind of homogenized Malay Indo culture, which is why the Cocos Islands are the only Australian territory to recognize Eid as a public holiday, with 75% of the population being Muslim.
Damn, that's crazy.
Everyone on Home Island.
Yeah.
Okay, so the thing is, this guy John only brought some of the slaves over. He was the first person to put a flag on the island or whatever, but then he leaves for a while and works on a ship with this dude, Alexander Hare. They go their separate ways for a while, and Alexander Hare ends up on one of the Cocos Islands with his harem of 40 or so enslaved Malay concubines.
Yep, yeah. Yeah, of course he does.
So he'd been plantation hopping for a while. He'd been kicked out of South Africa in the 1800s because... He had lived with a large number of concubines that appeared to dampen his popularity within colonial society and may have been, in large part, responsible for his next move.
Oh, no.
Previous to that, he'd been kicked out of the East India Company for trying to make his own colony in Banjarmasin, an Indonesian city on Borneo. So, this guy, right? Hair. He's been working with this other guy, Stamford Raffles.
Whoa, okay.
Ooh, big man Raffles.
Stamford Raffles.
Stamford with an M. And they're trying to help the British in the fight against Napoleon. It's a long time ago.
Jesus Christ.
So the Sultan of Banjarmasin, whatever, who had made the devil's bargain with the previous whites, the Dutch, were freaking out because the Dutch had left. Mm. And suddenly there's all these, you know, other tribes that had got the pointy end of the boot when this one set of people had allied with the Dutch. And they're talking about these encroachments from natives. And you see the Dutch had been protecting them from the natives. Anyway, yeah. So these encroachments from natives and such. So he sends a message, the Sultan, to Raffles, who's running Malacca in Malaysia, which is a British territory. And Raffles is like, hey, why not? Yeah, we can go help. We can take these islands. We can take this part of Borneo. This can be part of Britain.
Yeah.
So Raffles leaves Hare to manage the new British town. And Hare negotiates for 1,400 square miles for himself. This is how he becomes known as the White Raja of Borneo.
Yeah, that tracks.
What a name. But he's really bad at running a kingdom. It seems like his main skill is like sweet-talking people with power, but he's not good at talking to people that he has power over.
Yeah.
So he gets kicked out of Borneo within a couple of years, and he starts his journey that ends with the Cocos. So back to the Cocos. Hmm. And back to John Clooney's Ross, who kicks Hare off the Cocos and takes over, starting an actual business. In a 1903 article titled The King of the Cocoa Islands, the Timaru Herald, a New Zealand newspaper, describes his process this way.
Clooney's Ross returned in 1827 and found Hare in possession of an island. Having no legal right to the islands himself, he had to content himself with joint ownership, the two parties living on separate islands, however, on very bad terms with each other. But Hare was a man of worthless character, extremely idle and of dissolute habits, and his followers greatly detesting him. Many of them left his ranks and joined those of Ross. Hare speedily saw that his position was becoming an untenable one, and left the island and went to Singapore, where he eventually died. Damn. But Hare was a man of worthless character, extremely idle, dissolute habits.
Raid him.
And everybody hated him, and nobody wanted to stay and be his friend.
So, to supplement the harem, Clooney's Ross has got these slave convicts from Java, and they suck
at
drying
no.
coconuts. So he gets rid of them, and he gets these more expensive slaves from the Malay region.
Damn.
And it's the descendants of them and the harem that are like the population of Home Island today.
That's insane.
So that's how things go for about 30 years, right? Charles Darwin visits at one point on the Beagle. Mm. The Timaru Herald quotes his writings to a point.
Here's what the Timaru Herald
said Charles Darwin said.
Okay. Darwin mentions that he found the natives in a state of freedom, especially as regarding their treatment.
And here's the quote directly from Darwin's journal.
Okay. The Malays are now nominally in a state of freedom, and certainly so far as respects their personal treatment. But in most other points, they are considered as slaves. From the discontented state of the people, the repeated removals, and perhaps from a little mismanagement, things are not very prosperous. He said the exact fucking opposite thing.
Yeah. 1903 is crazy.
They were just like, he said something about freedom. Pop it in there. Print.
Yeah, so the British don't really care about the Cocos. Again, they're in the middle of nowhere and they're making fucking copra, which is like dried coconut. Mm. So it's not even like yummy coconut. They visit in 1857, right? And they send like a general and they're like, we claim this island, Cocoa Island, for the British Empire. And they realize on the way back that they were on the wrong Cocoa Island, so they have to come back to do it properly.
Oh my fucking God.
The guy's not that far off if you're the size of a planet.
God, what? So what, just outside of fucking Burma?
Yeah, so the Cocoa Island he was trying to get to is, like, in line with Chennai, but on the side of Burma. It's about 3,000 kilometers away from the Cocos Islands.
You absolute fuck-up. How do you fuck that up?
Yeah. I don't know. Wrong Cocos.
How did they get up into the Bay of Bengal?
No, he did, like, he didn't even know that he'd not gone to Bengal. It's like, you didn't think, like, oh, hey, this doesn't feel like Bengal or whatever. Very funny. Very funny.
What the fuck?
Anyway, so when they come back, they make the son of the original John George, the king of the island.
Of course.
Okay, they make him the superintendent.
Same thing.
And his domestic title is Tuan Pandai, which means the learned one, or if you put it into Google, Clever sir.
And I will be your new clever sir.
So the dynasty runs for a while pretty much like this. John George has George with one of his women, Sophia Dupont. George goes to Scotland to study engineering and comes back to become king or whatever. And he takes the title Tuan Tingi, which means something like High Lord. He marries one of the villagers, Inin. And he has John Sidney Clunies Ross in 1868. By the late 1800s, Queen Victoria had said the Clunies Ross family could run the Cocos for as long as they wanted.
Damn.
They have their own currency, which is only good at Clunies Ross's shop. And all of their living situations were controlled by, say it with me, John Clunies Ross.
That sounds about right.
Things are mostly normal, as it were, until, oh wait, the Second World War. By which time, the Cocos Islands are kind of way closer to Singapore and Australia because of planes and shit. There's also a brief mutiny by some of the Sri Lankan soldiers against their British officers who were stationed on the island, but obviously it doesn't plan out. Those were the only British troops executed in the whole Second World War.
Damn.
Their plan was to collaborate with the Japanese, so I don't want to offer my uncritical support to the mutineers, but the ringleaders' last words are fire. Gratien Fernando, also a great name.
It is. Loyalty to a country under the heel of a white man is disloyalty. Facts.
Yeah, I mean, look, man, Japan, but, like, facts. So, facts. John Sidney Clunies Ross dies during a Japanese bombing of the Cocos Royal Air Base.
Damn.
From a heart attack. And his... and his son John Cecil takes over. He's known as Tuan John, which means Sir John.
Oh my fucking God.
And he eventually sells the islands to Australia. He's forced to. For about $5 million, adjusted for inflation, $30 million, and he gets to keep his house and 12 acres.
Damn.
Like, they make him sell it, and they say they're going to arrest him if they don't. So it's a pretty good deal, honestly, to get $5 million out of it. He's pretty pissed off because an Australian politician had compared him to a southern slave plantation owner, and the United Nations said the Cocos Malay were living in feudal conditions.
But well.
He disappears and dies one day.
Good.
Yeah.
The boot fits.
His son runs a giant clam operation on West Island to carry on the family legacy. Although the Clunies Ross family lobbied for independence, the majority of islanders voted to be made a part of Australia in 1984. Mm. Because they're like, independence, so just this forever?
No thanks.
No thank you. It seems like not even the entire Clunies Ross family was on board at this point. So in the vote, 229 islanders voted to integrate, 21 wanted to have the free association situation, and only 9 people voted for independence.
Damn.
It's not even his whole family.
That's rough. That's rough numbers. You got to have an awkward chat after that.
Yeah.
Just like, I just want a cocktail. Yeah. I just want to watch like a sunset on a beach that also has like a 3-star like...
A little resort.
And eating clams and coconuts all day.
Like, it's like, babe, I get it. You have such a strong family history here. Funnily enough, so do I. We might be cousins. but I cannot have clam anymore. I cannot eat another clam. I will kill myself.
Now, there's a few people that moved from the mainland to live on West Island. And it's, look, I tried to find something in a bit more detail about it. Because it sounds like the main school, I think, is on West Island. And a lot of people from who live on Home Island work service roles in West Island, which has like the more resorty things and is where all the white people live.
Yeah.
So it does still seem like it's kind of segregated service economy. But also apparently like the West Islanders all like celebrate Eid and stuff. There's a couple of like West Islanders who have married into the Home Island community, which is weird. It's always weird seeing an Australian dude in like one of those like Muslim hats.
Yeah, true.
It never looks right. But yeah, so the Cocos is somewhere between idyllic Muslim island paradise and cheap aircraft carrier for Australia. It was briefly in the news again for a few years as Tamil refugees from Sri Lanka would land there. Mm. And they're like, we're in Australia now. You have to look after us now. We've made it. It was like the counter to stop the boats, right? Yeah. It was like,
they're like, all right, well,
if you want this,
then we can't get to the mainland. We'll get to any of your island extremities.
Yeah. They were like bussed out in darkened vans and flown back to Sri Lanka.
Yeah,
real normal shit.
You know?
It's really interesting to read about the Cocos Islands. It's kind of the disparity that we're used to. You have a much better serviced, higher up mainland and Home Island, which is way lower, and so it regularly floods.
Fuck.
And it's also the one that receives the brunt of the Indian Ocean trash. It's just on the current downstream from Indonesia, one of the most populated countries in the world. And here's what the beach surface looks like.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That's just crap. A lot of thongs.
Yeah. And that's mostly stuff being washed off from Indonesia. Fucking it just lands hell. On the cocos.
Yeah.
To make it even better, an estimated 93% of the rubbish is buried under the surface of the sand.
Oh, so even better.
You're seeing 7% of the rubbish.
Jesus Christ.
So that's nice.
Yeah, that's really good.
Millions of people worth of rubbish washing up on the coast of a tiny island with 500 mostly ignored residents.
Fucking hell.
And that, like, home island blocks West Island from the trash. The trash is coming from Indonesia. It hits home island, builds up there. West Island is higher up, doesn't flood, has all the white people on it.
Of course it does.
And the home islanders work there.
Fuck's sake.
Anyway, that's enough time out in the Cocos. Maybe we'll visit one day, but that's mostly impossible because of my fears of flying and water. And that actually is also enough time for us today. We're not going to go to any of these places realistically, so let's stop our little adventure and touch back down in Australia. I don't have any more extreme Australian points to share with you, although if you have any, if you want to know, there's a big argument about what the center of Australia is, and there's a couple of competing claims.
Okay.
Because there's, like, different ways to measure it.
I guess that's fair.
It's not like a circle.
Well, I guess that's fair.
Yeah.
But if we put a circle around Australia and made sure to capture, like, all the individual, like, you know, the size of a circle that we would need for the borders, you know, to be encompassed, which I guess means it just needs to be wide enough to have the west and east kind of encompassed. What's the middle of that?
Let me bring up the Wikipedia.
Yeah, because I'm keen to hear about what the consensus is, because obviously Australia is wider than it is, like, tall.
It's yeah. fucking huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we include the economic zone, it's in the middle of the Southern Ocean, I think.
Well, yeah, yeah,
that's
there
a
we
good
go.
Point. For the record, the lowest point, because we talked about the highest point in Australia, Mawson Peak, but the lowest point is Lake Eyre or Kati Tanda in Lake Eyre.
Nice.
There's also Deep Lake in Antarctica.
Damn.
But the... So there's the planimetric center of gravity, which is Lambert Gravitational Center, Northern Territory. There's also furthest from the coastline is another way people kind of measure Central Australia, like what
that's
the middle point
take.
Is. Those okay. are the two major ones. That's also in the Northern Territory.
I guess that makes sense. It's the longest one in the middle.
Exactly. But those are the two, like, and that's the... I think that seems to be the dispute.
The consensus seems to be it's the Northern Territory somewhere.
Yeah, and the planimetric center of gravity is like some shit they do. I tried to read about it, I didn't understand, but it's
fair enough. You know,
it's somewhere in Northern Territory is the middle part of continental Australia.
Damn, that's crazy.
And we didn't. I don't think there's anything we didn't really cover. If you want to go to the next slide again, we didn't talk about Christmas Island. Because that's its whole other
that's
thing.
That's so fair that we did not.
But I guess we should probably mention that Christmas Island is also, like, nowhere near Australia.
Yeah. yeah. It's over by Cocos.
And yeah. Indonesia. Like.
Yeah. It's much closer to Indonesia. The island's closer to Australia. Those are resorts. That's Lord Howe Island. That's where people go to fish or whatever.
Yeah.
That's Australia. We even shouldn't have come. And that's our episode. Any parting thoughts from you guys?
Gosh, don't put... Casey, get rid of the mouse. I know it's dead. I know it's dead. I don't want to see. I don't want to know about it.
Okay.
I was happier when there wasn't a dead mouse.
Well, there isn't.
No, you're right. It's just an entire
now it's
species
a memory.
Of rats. I just like, we'll get that part out of the way first. Damn, we kill a lot of animals all the time,
the
always.
The mouse, like, we didn't even do anything to the mouse, as it were. They just died because of humans. Like, there have
you know,
been animal. Like, there's a lot of animals that humans have killed, but we're starting to just, like, kind of ambiently.
Yeah, like, hey, we didn't even try to kill this one. Yeah. We just, like, we're fucking around and this whole species died.
We didn't even put it in a pressure cooker.
You know, we didn't even boil it for its fat. Yeah. Yeah, you know, and then also, like, just I think I would rather pull my teeth out than have to have a conversation with any person in a substantial, like, political office about why we have all of these overseas, like, territories, basically.
Yeah.
Like, I think I would rather, like, even, like, I think I would rather wax my eyelashes off than have to have that conversation. Because it's going to be excruciating, because there is no actual reason. Like, there's no justification for it that is worthwhile. There's just bullshit. Just bullshit.
Heard Islands is just money-making. The Torres Strait is... There's a lot of outcome of previous things happening in the Torres Strait. Like, at the end of the day, there has been an Australian presence there, and so some institutions have oriented towards Australia. So it creates a confusing situation. You know, there's a small number of people in Papua New Guinea. I don't know about a small number. There's a set of people in Papua New Guinea who wanted to integrate with Australia when they had independence. Gough Whitlam went over there and was just like, you guys are voting for independence immediately, as one of the first things he did, which, you know, shout out, although there's a lot of criticism in how he did it. Norfolk Island is kind of like an outcome of prior poor decisions. Ultimately, the thing that people talk about is like these all, while there's not like a military presence on most of these islands, they are the kind of things that very quickly become military presences if necessary. And that's part of the importance. There's some economic benefit. Like, I think Heard had probably the most in terms of the 100 million in fishing. And the Antarctic ones is like research or whatever.
Yeah. And speaking of military stuff as well, I think it's very interesting given like the recent developments of Australia, the US, and Japan all kind of like getting together to do joint training operations. And Australia's just purchased.
Japan's building our submarine.
Yeah. Well, they're not building our submarine. They're building our naval warships.
Oh, good.
Thank you very much.
We're going to invade Boigu Island.
You know, they're building our naval warships. And lucky us, Australia is going to be the first country to receive a Japanese warship other than Japan. They have never given one or sent one out to another country before. So there are questions about like, hey, like, are they any good?
Yeah. When's the last time you used these?
You know, but apparently they're building us a bunch of warships. And the idea is that they will, over the course of like, I don't know, 5 or 10 years, they'll bring people over to Perth to teach like Perthians or whatever, how to like make Japanese warships. And so that we will also have a construction here. But the first, like, I don't know, half a dozen ships will be from Japan. And then
I wonder how much that's going to cost.
Well, it surely doesn't fucking matter because we're all going to be obliterated by the time any of this matters anyway.
That's true. That's true. Let's obliterate our consciousness and start the long wind down to sleep. Shouldn't Have Come is a production of the three of us in the studio. You can, if you'd like to support the show, and we will be getting back to Patreon episodes soon. Like I mentioned, we've had some changes in job schedules, and things have been a little bit up and down. But if you'd like to support the show, which we do appreciate, it's at patreon.com/shouldn'tacome. That's shouldntacome. You can also, if you would like, email us, shouldn'tacome@gmail.com. You can follow us on YouTube, where we'll, you know, be having this episode as our first proper video. I mean, not video episode, but slideshow episode, like the Well, There's Your Problem podcast. YouTube.com/@shouldn'tacome. And if you'd like, the demo of my album is available on Bandcamp, yannix.bandcamp.com. That was Australia. We learned about the furthest points. I've been Yanni.
I have been Kieran.
I've been Casey.
And Archie's been sleeping for the last hour or so.
Thank God.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week to talk about Eurovision.
Yes. Yes, we shall.
This episode comes out in like... This episode comes out ages from now.
That's it.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that.
Gosh, like I hope current pop culture reference is still cool and poppin' and relevant.
I hope
nothing
there's...
happens in the next few weeks. Don't worry about why.
Nope.
God, I hope, like, Tasmania doesn't burn down by our next episode. It's like, man, we should really do a Tasmania episode.
You know...
I thought you were going to say, like, Katie Miller Heidke goes on a rampage, and then we were like, didn't see anything?
Heard Island just fucking explodes.
Heard Island, Katie Miller Heidke goes to Heard Island to try take it for herself.
Oh, yeah, just see her on that.
God damn it, hitting those high notes.
Just going, oh!
Exactly.
Over the tallest mountain in Australia. She claims it for the Heidke dynasty.
She's now worshipped as like a flame goddess.
By all the people who live on Heard Island.
Anyway.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.